This episode of the Daily Brief podcast is brought to you by Pez Motion Studio, tactfully taking on cross-cultural challenges since 2001. Hello, and welcome to the Daily Brief podcast. I am Paige Albiniak, editorial director of Promax BDA, and today I have the pleasure of chatting with Chris Sloan. He is owner and chief creative officer of 2C Creative. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi there. I'm glad we can bring you pleasure. I don't hear that very often. That's really nice.
All right. So since this is the first time you have joined us, and this is something I've been asking everybody, would you mind just introducing yourself to our listeners and sharing how you got your start in entertainment marketing and then what led you to create 2C?
You know, I started working in the business when I was 14 and really focused on editing and then became an editor-producer of I know this is going to sound very glamorous, but a fishing show that is still on to this day. But I always wanted to work in TV marketing for some reason because I thought, you know, it touched every aspect of the business. So, you know, when I was 21, I went to NBC in Burbank Entertainment, which I look at as my college education and my, you know, made my best friends there and as an editor and then became their first predator and then moved up to running NBC 2000, which was the original branding credit. You know, we introduced that whole notion of reformatting for the screen for credits and then over time moved to some other networks and then jumped over to the programming side, which was really fascinating at USA Network and Discovery Networks at TLC running production. So, you know, was fortunate enough to get a marketing and programming background. And then really the founding of 2C was pretty simple, was that I'm a total change of attitude, change of latitude like Miami Dude. And I really wanted to come back home. And it was very simple that my wife and I moved back in 2005. We felt that let's just create a business that's enough to sustain us so we can work with people we like and live in the place we love. And that's, it was kind of everything. And it wasn't even promos. That's kind of how we started or marketing or graphic. It just kind of took off from there.
So, and when you were at NBC, you worked with John Miller and Vince Manzi, right?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to be able to, I would call it NBCU as an NBC university. To work at the agency. So yeah, it was, you know, my guru, John Miller, Vince Manzi, and my mentor, Jeff Rowe, who really gave me, you know, a start and a chance. And, you know, working with those people, that team through the whole must-see TV era. And I'd never cut a promo in my life or a design package. And being able to learn and be a part of that team, which it was like, it was an incredible, incredible ride. I just loved it.
Okay, and then you jumped over to TLC, you said?
Then I went over to do my dream job. Well, I made this crazy detour to work over in the UK for as a creative director at Sky TV, and then moved to Miami and had my favorite job probably was running marketing for Barry Diller's USA Network. We had a group of TV stations, and they were very unconventional because they were like city TV. They were all hyper local, so we had like a big Today show.
Like,
so yeah, Whammy. It was called Whammy, and that was the most fun entrepreneurial crazy. Experience of my career. And then a lot of famous people came from that station. It was like Daniel Tosh and Ben Mankiewicz, and a lot of people have gone to do great things and then moved over to USA Network and ran reality programming when it first started, when reality programming first kind of took off.
So, and then from USA, you were already in Miami, so you stayed in Miami and opened up 2C.
Well, after USA actually, I moved back to Los Angeles and then moved to DC. To run production for TLC, and then and then made the beeline back south because I can't do winter and I cannot do LA. I'm crazy. I love humidity.
Oh, I like humidity also. All right. So speaking of being in Miami, you and I have talked about this before, but what are some of the challenges and also what are some of the opportunities you have by running a creative agency out of Miami?
Well, I mean, I would say the opportunities are. You know, we're one of the larger companies outside the New York, LA axis that do what we do, and particularly in Miami. You know, Miami is the capital of Latin America, and it's a very international place. So we are fortunate enough to have amazing team members that come from all over the world. If you walk through our offices, sure, there's a few gringos like me, but, you know, we've got multiple countries. It looks like the United Nations in there. And so people come from, have very different sensibilities and takes, which is wonderful. There are also people who, I'll just say it, I mean, if you're in LA or New York, a huge deep talent pool, but, you know, people move around a lot because there's 80 places to work. Our promise to people is if you want to have national general market work and you don't want to move to New York or LA, but you want to experience what it's like to work at a New York or LA-based creative operation, you can do it from the comfortable confines of the 305, yo. And So I think that's a really tantalizing offer, and we have people who stay with us a long time and are very loyal. But yet, people don't realize the amount of top advertising school in the country is down here, a number of design schools. So we get to access really creative people and people who aren't kind of jaded, and they bring with them a lifetime experience from a lot of different places. So I would say that's ultimately what the positive is. There's certainly, you're right, there are challenges to it.
So the other challenge that's come up lately, which is one that was totally out of your control, are all these hurricanes that have been rolling through. So I know that you guys first had to get prepared for Hurricane Irma. You can correct me about this. From the safety of Colorado, which is where I am, it seemed like it mostly bypassed you guys. There was some flooding, but it hit the Keys really hard. But then obviously Hurricane Maria came through and really did a lot of damage in Puerto Rico. So let's talk first about Irma. And I know you guys did some things to prep for sort of what the worst case scenario might be. What are some of the things that you guys did? And what is some advice you would give other agencies who might be facing that same scenario?
Well, I mean, I would say, this is a serious one for us. I've been through a number of hurricanes. I've been through the earthquakes. I don't know if bad natural disasters follow me around, but I was in Northridge and I went through Andrew. And so, I promise I'm not a prepper, but of course it may not be. With the state of the world right now, I think a prepper might be a pretty good thing.
Just good thinking.
It is. I believe it, unfortunately. So I guess the challenge is that we're kind of backing up one of the challenges of being in Miami is that there used to be the perception challenge, and then there was the technology challenge. And so we work New York and LA hours because none of our clients, except for Telemundo, really are in Miami. So we know that, you know, our clients are very good people, but we've got to get the work done. And that's why it's got to be as seamless as if we're down the street on Wilshire Boulevard or on down in Soho, as and the fact is that we're 1,000 miles away. So that, of course, means traveling a lot, being in front of your face a lot, probably to some, maybe a little persistent at times. So we do a lot of day-and-date work. And just because a storm's coming through our place does not mean that their work should be or could be interrupted. Sympathetic or not, the work has to get done. Now, the second month we were in business, we had two hurricanes hit us, and they were significant. It was Katrina and Wilma, but at that time we were producing, a lot of digital work for AOL, and it wasn't time and date sensitive, so it wasn't the end of the world, and we could just kind of edit on laptops and do our thing with a lot of battery power. Our worst case fear and scenario is that the hurricane season peaks during the fall launch in August and September, and we do day and date shows like we've done Steve Harvey, we do Harry, People's Court Judge Mathis, and then a lot of work going on. So your biggest fear every year is that you're going to have a hurricane warning, and whether a hurricane comes through or not, you're going to be disrupted. And so we build in disruption, and we have a plan every year, a very specific plan with different levels of how we enact it for emergency, business, continuity, and then recovery. Now, in the case of and every year there's a scare. This year was different because, to be honest, on Labor Day morning, I used to be a weatherman, so I'm very tied into that world, and we know a lot of people at the Hurricane Center, FEMA. You know, it was like it felt absolutely like we were going to have an apocalypse and potentially be destroyed. And I don't say that with any hyperbole at all. That's how we felt. That's how everybody in South Florida felt. So we have a plan, and we strongly believe in having all material at all times for fire, water, floods, whatever reason, multiple power generators. Material is backed up. It's secure. It's on multiple drives, and we have people over the country who have worked with us before, so we can operate virtually. And in this case, for the first time ever, we had to completely shut down the office with the idea that we could be shut down for 2 weeks. So we had to fly a lot of our people out. A lot of them drove out because, keep in mind, it was like we have agreements at different parts of the state. Just because if this storm could have the forecast track, it could have gone anywhere. So we had people Atlanta, Ireland. At this point, people were just evacuating to multiple locations because it's wherever you can get a flight. And then we have freelancers and people that we worked with. So we sent multiple drives out, multiple locations. We set up different ways to let our employees know the status twice a day where we were. And we were prepared to, if the place was demolished, or at the very least 2 weeks, there would be no difference. And then we also, the morning of, when we decide to evacuate, pull the plug, which would be on a Thursday, we every day would update our clients proactively of what was happening, not to worry. Here's who you can reach. If you can't reach them, here's who you can reach. And frankly, we support a lot of our staff by sending water, sending them out, helping them make arrangements to get out. So it's very, very important that we also take care of our people and be understanding that they also, you know, some they may not be able to show up for work because they've got to go protect their own families, or so let's work ahead, or let's replace you because you've got to leave. I mean, we had people who had to leave in early. So this was, and we were down, we operated virtually for about, initially with the office completely closed for about 4 days, because even though we weren't destroyed, thank God, we had no power in the building, even though there were generators which failed. So, and then by, it took about a week to get everybody back. And I consider our proudest hour because we did not miss a delivery, no creative suffered and sacrificed. And that's just the price we pay for living in the hurricane zone, just like in New York, LA, you live in the earthquake zone, and New York, you live in the blizzard zone, and frankly, Sandy, I mean, you saw what happened there. So it was one of the biggest challenges, and I won't gild the lily. I mean, it was extremely expensive. It was disruptive. It's emotionally draining, but thank God, I think we're all just so appreciated that we were spared. When I drove away from my house in the office, finally, I left at the very end there, and with some of my team members who stayed till the bitter end, I think we all thought it was over.
Meaning you thought you were not going to be able to come back, or you thought it was going to be destroyed?
I never thought we weren't going to come back because we would just have to rebuild and reestablish, but I thought there was a pretty good chance by the forecast track that the building, the business would be really harmed and people would be harmed. I watched my home. I have security cameras and I watched them remotely, and I watched the water get within 6 inches of going into my house. So I kind of thought, it was the only time in my life I've ever walked away, driven away from my house, my business, thinking we all potentially, could be catastrophic. We really believed it, and it became a sigh of relief. But then, of course, when you got back, you know, we saw the, you know, how much power and how many lives have been disruptive.
Yeah.
It's like a relaunch of a company. It's like, I mean, we'd never boarded up a window, finally had to board up offices. I mean, we're only a mile away from the ocean. So it's not like we're on the seventh floor. We're not going to flood, but can't get in the building, and you can't get cellular data. So it was the biggest test of us that we've ever, I would say, that we've ever had. But you know, like they say, if you survive something like that, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And I think not only did it unite us further, but it also proved us that, hey, LA and New York, don't be worried about us missing your spot or deadline, because we were able to keep continuity going when we were being faced with a disaster. And I challenge every client was like, they were like, you know, take care of yourself and understanding. But I think people were pretty impressed that we were able to do this, and we didn't call up and give an excuse and say, look, we're going to need to turn this project back in, or we're not going to make it. We just didn't miss a beat. We do not want to be tested again, though. It's not like we can do this every day.
Well, then,
rough.
I mean, then, so Irma came through, and then right on Irma's heels was Maria, which Maria did not hit Miami, but obviously demolished Puerto Rico. And 2C, and I know you guys have been working with Discovery's Laura Richardson on relief for Puerto Rico with Operation Carelift. So can you tell me, A, you know, after you just gone through all that with Irma, why did you then decide to turn around and put all this effort toward Puerto Rico? Why was it something you felt like you guys wanted to be involved in? And also just update us on what's happening now with it. I know there quite a lot has happened in the past week or so.
It's been really emotional and draining. I'm actually calling from Spirit Airlines, who's our partner in this, and we did our third evacuation flight last night. At this point, the headline there is working with Spirit, we've airlifted about 60,000 pounds of 50,000 pounds of supplies in. Spirit has evacuated 500 people out over the course of 5 relief flights, 3 of which we've been very involved with. So, I mean, I guess the motivation is that as a company, look, I mean, I'm going to be blunt. I mean, we love our craft, whether that's digital work, shoots, design, we love our craft. But, you know, the tough thing about promos and TV and music and a lot of things in general is that it's pretty fleeting. You know, you pour your energy into these pieces, and they only live for a short time. And at the end of the day, it's a noble cause, I think, to entertain people and to give them escape. But at the same time, it's like, what are we all here for? You know, I faced some tragedy in my life, and people have rallied around us. And you know, if you have a business or a platform you can use for good, when you're spared and you're grateful for so much, you got to give back. And so as a company, whenever a natural disaster or somebody has a charity, we match donations, and we, whether it's Harvey or Irma, or we help each other, or and so we've always believed that you have to have a moral social compass and give back. And that doesn't mean to be schmaltzy. It's just real, because we're blessed people. At the end of the day, we're all really lucky. We can all be stressed out, but we're super lucky in comparison to. And you know, a lot of our staff are from countries, and the stories they tell of what they went through because they didn't have what we did as Americans. It's freaking harrowing. So in this particular case, if anybody's still listening, because I prattle on and I would imagine you've got the next podcast. But in this particular case, we felt that we were really lucky, and we'd already done a huge charity drive for Hurricane Harvey and then Irma. But it's like to write checks after a while is like it's the best experiences we had, whether it was the House of Awesome or it was a lot of my son, family foundation of when the team repaint schools, is when you physically do something, it's a completely different experience. So in this case, Laura Richardson, who's I've known for 20 years, she used to work for me at Whammy, and then she's now head of marketing and promotion at Discovery Science Animal Planet, is from Aguadilla. You know, we're still very close. She's a warrior person. She's a client, but she's a friend first. She's a warrior, you know, and so this is a crazy little story, is that when the Hurricane Katrina happened, Laura's from the Gulf Coast of Mississippi. She was a creative director at TLC, and she just told them, she goes, I got to go help my people. And instead of just writing a check to the Red Cross, she dropped what she was doing, went into the hurricane zone, was there for like a month, sleeping in high school gyms. She took a camera down there and documented it. They ended up making a documentary that aired on TLC about it, but it was like she got her hands dirty. I mean, she gets her hands dirty on production. Anybody who knows her knows she is in the trenches. So she calls and she's like, hey, on a Friday, she's like, anything, any of y'all, some friends of her from Puerto Rico, some people in the industry, anybody know, I need some help to try to get some flies into Aguadilla. So we just huddled, this is about 9 days ago, and I was like, you know what, I'm an airline guy, that's my second life, it's like, I got us a plane, I'm going to buy the gas personally, and it'll be like we can probably carry 7,000 pounds to a plane down to Puerto Rico. It's a plane you'd never want to fly on, which is good because it's not carrying passengers. So we'll put a GoFundMe page up, and it raised like $10,000. We got the plane. Laura got the plane permitted through connection she had. I got the plane. A lot of people contributed, and this is great. And we see this number all of a sudden go from 10,000 to 20 to 30,000. We're like, the reason we're doing this is because of Laura's relationships being from Puerto Rico. Or living there, we could actually, and connections we had, we could actually, instead of supplies kind of going to God knows where, and then sitting in warehouses because it's all held up down there, we had guaranteed that we can get them in people's hands. So then what happens is I start calling a lot of other airlines as backup, and of course the charter airline canceled because of technical issues and government bureaucracy and red tape. So, oh my God. By the way, the number keeps going up. At this point, $150,000, we're at 60,000 pounds. And so Spirit Airlines, this is a day and a half after founding, I just called them and I said, know a lot of them, and they're like, yeah, myriad of reasons we're going to partner with you, and so we're taking eight Airbus A321s in there, and we've got people from all over the industry, and I'm talking competitors, vendors, other networks, Ion Network in particular brought in like $30,000 or some huge amount of supplies. Discovery kicked in. I mean, Hemisphere Media, caterers, everybody started getting behind this. And so, and again, I want to mention competitors that we are head-to-head with, like everybody united. Promax ran a story. We email blasted, and we got just so much outpouring. So then we've had three relief flights in last week, and we go down there with 18,000 pounds or so of supplies. And when you see it up close, and you see Laura go in country and see her friends and family with our special forces guy and our representatives, and we see proof that it's in people's hands, and we go through Lufthansa Technik, the largest employer in that part of the country, and the part we go into is very cut off, you cannot help but give. And then we bring back 200 people onto this plane, 220. We have a medic on board. We work with Spirit to identify names because there is no phone service. We've got people on satellite phones down there that we've given them. And they're in a state of shock. You know, last night we had 50 people in wheelchairs. We had people that had nothing on their backs, people who hadn't been in food or air conditioning for 2 weeks. And so they're in a state of shock. And then so it's not chaotic in the airport. And then when they get on the plane, it's like the first air conditioning they felt in 2 weeks. And then people are it's delayed because of weather, and we've got to get out there before night because it's very rough conditions. There's no scheduled flights. And then as we finally push back, you know, these people that are just in a state of shock start cheering, and it's life-affirming. And we've got like five or six people on board telling them. And then when we take off, happens every time now, it's like, and the last flight I did, it started pouring rain. And it's like Puerto Rico's crying. It's like it becomes very, very somber. And people realize the reality setting is they may or may not. They have no idea when they're going to go back to their island, their place. Some places don't have people to go. And then when they get on the plane, because of the donations we received from all these people, we serve meals, drinks, and then many of them land, like last night. They have no place to go. They've missed the connection. I don't think last night we put up 18 people in hotels. So when they land, instead of just, hey, you're dropped off, it's like, we're there. Operation Puerto Rico Carelift. All of us were there, and Laura and Don and my wife, people, and they, Laura and Don had been down there all day yesterday. And we identify the people that are suffering and they have no place to go. And we've got hotel rooms booked, and we've got gift cards for food. And you're just trying to, it's a little chaotic. And then Spirit's rebooking them on flights. In many cases, we're putting people on buses and the train out of here so they can go on to Orlando or Newark. And I can tell you, I've loved being a part of promotion and Promax and doing one, but this is the most life-affirming thing. And the generosity that we receive in terms of Spirit and spirited people and gratitude is, it's in this very toxic, dark time where social media is, it should be called anti-social media. seeing how this social media cause all came together, and it's, again, 9 days old, and to see the gratification and their strength, and it again reminds you, once again, how lucky we are and how we are bitches about deadlines or tough bosses or projects or whatever, clients, age, just whatever, is nothing compared to people. When you look in their eyes and go, my God, you lived through 150-mile-per-hour winds, you lost everything, and then you've been suffering, bathing in this fountain in the middle of the, that's non-potable with algae in it in the middle of the town square. I mean, it's horrific. And people have forgotten about for Puerto Rico, and they're Americans. And so we felt we need to give back, and we're not stopping. And it's a big team. And I say it's an industry-wide team effort. And if you want to, we have a GoFundMe page. And if you go to type in Operation Puerto Rico Carelift, you'll see. And we're very transparent. There's no overhead except for some t-shirts. And we post heavily on my Facebook, on the 2C Facebook page, and we update you every day. And people can, you can, if you go on there right now, you'll see pictures and video of people coming off these planes, using the supplies, the relief efforts, and how it's working. So we want to prove to you that it's really happening. And we want you to, and if anybody has any planes, ships, or cash, just send us our way, because it's real. So that's my, I didn't mean to shill for myself, but there's my
promo. Okay. I'll give the actual website. It's gofundme.com/OperationPRCarelift. So www.gofundme.com/OperationPRCarelift. If you want to go donate, you can also send supplies. They have a list of supplies there. So you can send money, you can send actual supplies.
Just one brief thing about the supplies. What we could use now is financial, because we've taken the supply list down because we've got so much payload that we still need to ship. So what we're doing with the money is supplies in, you know, the next month, we're bringing down a lot of gift cards, which are lightweight, to like Walmart, Walgreens, and Shell, which have started to reopen. And then we are using also that for relief when these people that are essentially, they're evacuees, but they have nothing, to also really help them when they patriate themselves on the ground. So that's the supply thing. We're just putting a bit of a hold on that. The 2C offices look like a warehouse for FedEx at this point.
Okay. So, but it's easy there to donate if you want to just donate some cash. So also, Chris, just 9 days out from Maria, I mean, would you say things have improved down there at all? Or do you think it's still sort of status quo, or sort of what's the status?
Well, I mean, Laura, who actually, you know, knows the town, is even better to ask than I am, because she actually leaves the airport perimeter and goes and into the places where she grew up. It's not getting better. It's horrifying. And I mean, it's graphic. I mean, I don't know how depressing we want to get on this podcast, but it's a continuing, not only a continuing epidemic, but people are getting sicker by the moment. They are disillusioned because they feel they've been forgotten. We've heard reports from the doctors that are just a number of people committing suicide because they believe that nobody's there for them, that there's no hope, bodies stacking up in the morgue. The numbers that are being, in the hospital, which has no power, the numbers that are being reported are of 32 deaths, and it's somehow cavalierly suggested that this is nothing compared to other disasters and people should be somehow proud of this. I won't get partisan political, but I mean, to see 50 of the people that we saw on these flight last night in particular, this is a humanitarian crisis of 3.4 million people that are stuck on an island that has only power to roughly 5%, that was already down at the beginning, has no potable water and no infrastructure. And it is a disaster. It's only going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. And everybody's got to really hear that loud and clear. It is so far away from getting better. And if you fly in there and you see it, it's like, I've been through hurricanes, but a hurricane on an island with that many people. And the worst part about it is This was also the staging area for the Virgin Islands, which is also the America. And so it was blown out. So you can imagine the lifeline to the Virgin Islands has been cut, which we also have been donating a lot to. And so this is I don't know if there's ever been a natural disaster on this scale. Once this is all said and done, as far as human, not talking about property damage, but I'm talking about human casualty, as this one, it is utterly heartbreaking. And everybody's got to take matters in their own hands and try to help, because the federal government has been somewhat, I believe, impotent in its response.
Just continue with depressing conversation and then we'll move on. But I don't think it's helping that, you know, then we have Las Vegas and that's very distracting. And, you know, people just sort of their focus moves on and people forget about the issues. You know what you're saying? It's like Haiti, that those when they had the giant earthquake, and it's a long time before it gets better because you already don't have the infrastructure in place.
Well, it's true. You know, I'm here at Spirit today, and, you know, I had to tell you, I mean, these people not only, you know, this airline was nearly devastated by the hurricane, the whole fleet and operations are here, and so they're weary, and then all of a sudden they've been doing this operation, then Las Vegas comes up, and, you know, the amount of response they have to do for their team members because people may be affected and passengers who are affected is overwhelming. And you know, you have these horrible, toxic events, and I hate to say it, this was the worst. I mean, this is the worst mass shooting in the nation's history. It is not even, it's so disturbing because it's like, oh, here's a new idea. We're going to shoot from the top of buildings with crazy semiautomatic rifles and create mass damage. It's just, you become almost like, it's just like Trump and his tweets. You almost become numb because you're like, what insane thing's going to happen next? I mean, it really, as a father, I hate to be fatalist, but this is a scary time. And so, but at the same time, then we're like, okay, well, now everybody's going to forget about this other, you know, 3.3 million people suffer, because that's the news cycle. And right. This is something that's so horrific. And it's like, there's just so many horrible things that are piling onto each other, and it becomes overwhelming. It's like, nobody can save the world. The only thing that saves the world is true. It's a word that's thrown around. If people go on Facebook and they like to go thoughts and prayers, or like, or they change their profile picture, that's not solving anything. Actions and kindness solve problems. And I'll tell you what somebody did that was so, Seth Berkowitz over at Workshop Creative did something that I was so touched by, is like, of course we started donating, you know, and tried to efforts and Spirit and everything, you know, on Vegas. And he actually said, you know, he actually sent a donation to our foundation. He said, his third one, he said, I just want to stand by and say there's still good in the world. And so, and I want to just make another donation because I can do something about it. And so I think there's tragedy. There's so many tragedies. Everybody just needs to step up, and it's not just, we did just bitching about the administration and bitching about, and then, you know, 3 days later, you kind of move on. It's like, it's not real. There's those 58 people are killed and 400 injured. Think about how many really people are affected, because they all have families, of extended families and friends. It's like, that's a friggin' epic catastrophe.
I was going to recommend, though, I think for people, it is important to do something. You do have an opportunity here to donate and keep Puerto Rico in your thoughts, in your actions. So I think that's something to take advantage of. And I think that also, it's helpful when you feel helpless, you know, to take action. It's a small thing in the grand scheme, but I think it helps you feel empowered. So I'm going to completely now move away from hurricanes and depressing events of the world. This will be an awkward transition, but something I have been talking to agency owners about is how they are future-proofing their businesses. So you sort of talked about it in that you have plans in case of disaster, things that you do to make sure that you guys stay in business when things get difficult. But the entertainment industry is also changing quite a bit. The way these businesses need to operate is changing. What are some things that you have done to help 2C future-proof?
Well, you know, future-proofing is a really interesting concept because, you know, there's so many changes and so many options. And there's so many opportunities to be seized. And, you know, and I have the belief that if you run your business for the next 3 years, like you run it the last 3 years, I don't think you'll thrive. You may survive, but that's not a really great scenario. So, but the challenge is like, there's so many options out there. And do you chase the Snapchat? Do you chase certain aspects of digital? Do you chase direct to brand? Do you chase some people? Are you going to go on full on to advertising? Are you going to do micro content? Are you going to, you know, and so you can be so blitzed with so many options that you lose, that you become distracted by what your core competencies are. So what we do, and I say we're doing because it's definitely a work in progress, is, of course, you know, we started as a digital first company and strangely moved away from that. We fell into promos completely and marketing and content by complete accident. So we have really amped up our digital capabilities with a joint partner, Flip 11, and we created Flip 2C to handle, so we can be much more involved in 360 campaigns and digital campaigns. And we have an amazing team of experts, and we've already done projects for Pop TV and Weather Channel and CNN that are digital based. But at the same time, I think you have to, and we've also been diversified. We're unique, and we're an agency that produces full on legitimate TV series. I get the reality shows, I don't know how legitimate, but but I would say, you know, so we also produce content. We've had 7 series on the air, and that's, you know, and real, you know, I mean, it's a full separate division called 2C Originals. But the other thing you have to do is that you can't become so distracted that you lose sight of what it is you're good at and where you need to be better at. So, like, a few trends I've observed that we need to be, that we're really doubling down on because of where the industry's going, is that in this era of peak TV with so much content, you know, we do a lot of live action shoots and design, and there's different eras in the world where it's a designer's market or it's a director's market. Well, I think right now also it's become an editor's market because there's less money to be spent on actually producing content budget. There's more money spent on the content, but the networks spend less on the marketing, and they spend less on the big flashy shoots because, by the way, the shows look amazing themselves at this point. So they're incredible, and you've got the content speaks for itself. So there's really been a movement. Like, we've really doubled down a lot on our editorial and our storytelling prowess purely there because the graphics and live action have always been there. And editing's really, I'm an editor, so I'm very sensitive to it. But I think that's, like, specifically really, really important is astounding trailer cutting. And when I say the word trailer, I believe every promo at this point, whether it's digital, a digital piece or a on-air piece, is a trailer. Like, every show was at this point needs to be worthy of that elevated level of cutting and writing. And it's nice. It takes you back to your core. So we've really tried to also take the things that we're traditionally good at that are even more in demand and just really kind of hyperlapse them, if that makes any sense.
Well, tell me what hyperlapse means.
Oh, I guess I was looking at my phone when I said that. I'm just saying supercharge it. I mean, it's okay. Like, really accentuate that ability. And so we've really, every year, it's like, last year, it's really expanding our digital. It's like, this year, it's like, let's really double down on really strong editorial and sound design and then also, you know, a lot of direct-to-brand work. And by the way, the thing that will not be disrupted that we are really strong at that gets absolutely no glamour and nobody really puts on the reel is the industry case scenarios and presentations, B2B type work.
Yeah.
That stuff, it takes has even more value because they have to justify their existence. So if we can do, we've done the upfront for the Super Bowl and multi-channel providers, videos on how to use the systems and board tapes and things of that nature. And because the B2B non-glamorous agency stuff that nobody ever sees, that has taken on even more importance. So we really doubled. I consider us like the sales tape and sizzle reel and case study experts. And those are fun stories to tell and intellectually stimulating. So that's another place where I think you have to double down on your core competency.
Mm-hmm. So one thing I've been asking people also is, do you feel like your relationship or agency relationships with their clients or with client networks more specifically has changed? And if so, how has it changed?
Well, it is a business of relationships always. And, you know, I'd say it's changed only in the sense, I mean, everybody is being asked to do more with less. There's nothing a dagger through a agency's heart as the words, we're taking it in-house. That is, those are horrifying. They send shudders through our bone marrow. And, or, you know, it's like, well, we only get to go out of house a few times a year. So I'm going to, you know, I'm obviously, you know, people, I appreciate loyalty. I'm going to work with somebody I know because I can give them less. But it's like, and then what's happened is so many people who, you know, who worked in the industry as they've had to move on because it's downsized. A lot of people have, you know, had to create their own shops, which has been great for us because we hire a lot of people who are our clients.
Right.
At some point, but I think everybody will tell you the same. It's like the budgets are more constrained, the expectations are higher, there's more deliverables, everybody's got a more challenging time of it. And we live in an era where we've got Amazon, who is phenomenal, but Amazon dominates every market category they choose. And whether it's becoming number one in 40% of the online sales in this country, and you can see the market share of Netflix, and you can see, and to some extent, Hulu. And so you've got these three new players that are only going to get stronger, and everybody's got to change their game. So at the same time, you've got to, it's like the Indy 500. You've got to run the race while running while having a tire removed at the same time. So it's made everything more challenging, more fragmented. And we all fell in love with a different business than we're in, but yeah, that doesn't mean you can't fall in love with where we're going. And it's an exciting time, but it's also, the Harvard Business Review said the only business that's considered more disrupted than media is financial services. So even disruption's a cliche. So it's made it, I guess the real challenges is these are human beings involved, and we've got to find a way for them not to suck the joy out of it. And there's got to be still celebration of, because at the end of the day, great creative and great ideas win, even in spite of the fact that I would defy anybody out there to say that they don't feel challenged. I don't know what your experience is, but that's, we all get together and we commiserate. It's
still challenging. Yes. I think it's interesting because I recorded a podcast yesterday with Esther Weinberg, and she does a lot of work with companies in transformation. She also runs the Thrive program for Promax BDA, which educates basically people who are sort of mid-career wanting to move to the next level. But anyway, a couple of things that she said that really ring true with what you're saying. One is everybody brings their humanity to work, and it's important so that they feel like that, like when you talk about bringing joy to your work, but also just feeling like you can be a human being at work, that you're not just a cog. One, and two, extending on that, also what you're saying about doing hurricane relief, you know, feeling like you're making an impact and that you're contributing more than maybe just whatever your day-to-day job is. So I think those two ideas are really resonating just throughout the whole industry, throughout what's happening this week. I just think it's sort of interesting that the two of you are both in very different parts of the business, but are both sort of making those two big points.
Yeah, I mean, kindness is a word, you know, we're in a battle of good and evil right now, so kindness is a word that's bantied about a lot. And it's interesting because there's a lot of, I've seen more acts of kindness, and I've seen more acts of unkindness, I think, in this concentrated amount of time. But a great campaign lives for 2 or 3 weeks or a month. What keeps me going is great creative, but it's like what keeps Laura going as well is like, I believe in a lot of others out there, is if you have the platform and the tools and the creativity to do something else with it and not just play lip service to it, that lasts forever. Even a great TV show, like we were talking about Netflix and binging shows. I mean, what's a show like Stranger Things or something? It's like, it's for 2 weeks. Everybody's talking about it, and then it's gone, and it's on to the next thing. But, you know, if people's lives are being saved, that's a legacy that goes on forever because they procreate and they've got families. And again, I'm not painting myself as any sort of saint because I'm certainly not. I'm very fallible and a persistent guy. But it's like an entourage. It almost becomes like competitive. It's like if you do it for the right reason, it's like, let's do it for the kids. And that gives you a lot of fulfillment that you're doing something special. And you're kind of fighting back the forces of evil. As bad as that is, I just think we're fighting a lot of forces of evil out there.
All right. So beyond fighting the forces of evil.
That's depressing again.
No, I know. We're gonna leave the forces of evil. But I'm just going to ask you my closing question, which is, and having just talked to you about everything you're doing, I will be surprised if you have any time at all to watch television. But is there anything that you are watching right now or have watched in recent months that you've really enjoyed and would recommend?
Well, I watch a lot of Lynx because I look at all of our work. I hate to say it, but I think the fall season started and I didn't even get to see Will and Grace. I mean, and it's important to be culturally relevant. So I probably haven't watched more than 3 hours of TV in 3 months because it's been there's been a lot going on. But Curb Your Enthusiasm came back, and that was chicken soup for my awkward, uncomfortable soul. I just love I love it. And also just, you know, because what's more uplifting in times of disaster than watching Narcos? I'm very happy that Narcos. And so for me, the idea of do what?
Drug lords, yeah.
Drug lords, yes. So for me, the idea of binge watching is actually getting to watch an hour of TV uninterrupted. And so I hope to one day be able to retire and do nothing but watch, go catch up on 300 episodes of Breaking Bad. And I'm, by the way, the one guy who's never been able to have the time to get through Game of Thrones, and it kills me. So
except
I guess that's
that,
my...
I know you will never retire, Chris Sloan. I have no faith that you... I don't think you will ever retire. Even if you do, you'll still be super busy. So
I'll do something stupid on it with airplanes. I'll always be doing it. There's part of me that wishes I'm like, because you feel it's like, you know, when you, in the old days when people used DVRs, I was so happy when a show sucked because it was like, okay, I really wanted to watch. I really was so excited about Vinyl or in particular. And I was like, oh, this is so horrible. That means I can delete the season pass and I don't have any, we're done. So
yep.
It's like you get DVR guilt because it's all stacked up and it's just laughing at you saying, you're never going to have time to watch me. So it's like, and by the way, to me, the important way of watching TV is I think you have to try to watch at least one episode of everything as much as you can. And
that's hard.
And it's like, so it's kind of like, I feel now I know why Joseph Edalian at Vulture is, you know, such a curmudgeon because he's got to watch one of everything. He'd probably just, if he had his choice, like to just sit back and binge watch episodes of Seinfeld. But no, I've got to look at another show. It's going to take an hour of my life back that I'll never get back.
Well, or you could consider it an hour of your life where you get to relax. But I also enjoyed, I talked about this on an earlier podcast this week, but I also very much enjoyed, I think it's the season 9 premiere of Curb Your Enthusiasm. So that comes recommended. Okay, Chris, I'm going to end
it
on
that.
Wasn't
it great because it was just as awkward and as horrible as always? It was beautiful.
It was definitely awkward. I mean, yeah, I was saying that I do find the way he constructs his episode so funny. I mean, he just starts in one place and you just see him work his way to where it's going and it comes. I mean, it literally goes in a circle. So it's just so funny how he puts those together.
Well, the good news is if you've read any of interviews with him, he's Larry David, who sounds, you know, the most awkward, curmudgeonly guy, actually said, you know, he really missed it and he wants to keep doing it. So it's like this guy's going to be like 70 years old and still acting like he's 3. So he made it sound like it's going to go on forever.
Chris. All right. I'm going to wrap it up.
This is so much fun.
Well,
I hope everybody starts drinking heavily after listening to this.
They might be drinking shots. All right. We'll do it again sometime. Thank you so much, Chris, for being on. I appreciate it. And thank you for everything you guys have done around Hurricane Relief. I think we all owe you a big thank you.
And I appreciate it. And to the one person that has actually sat through this entire podcast,
me.
If you could just spread the word to everybody that we cannot thank the industry enough and Promax and everybody enough for the contributions, because you'll see, go to our 2C Facebook page or Operation Puerto Rico Care, you'll see what your donations and support are doing.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. We will talk again soon. Have a great day.
Have a good one.
We would like to thank Pest Motion Studio for sponsoring today's episode on Espanol and in English, on TV and online, in Chicago and in Buenos Aires. Pest Motion Studio designs for diverse audiences. Check out their animated spots and come say hola at www.pestlab.com. That's www.pestlab.com. Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate LaCaire-Marion and social media coordinator Kristen Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige, follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack, follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. Subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.